Evangelion, the Neon Genesis Evangelion Rewatch Podcast. My name is Mike Kelly.
And I am April Lynn Cowett. And today we're going to be talking about episodes 23 and 24.
Yeah, we're nearly done with it. These are the last two traditional episodes.
Thank God.
I wouldn't thank God quite yet. We still have End of Evangelion to go.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to need a strategy for that one.
That's going to be...
Find myself something happy planned to do immediately afterwards.
I think I'm just going to either... I haven't decided on whether I'm going to watch that with ice cream or whiskey.
I think watching with ice cream and then going out for drinks afterwards.
That may be the best option. Trying to figure out, like, get away from all that weird craziness. But
oh, my goodness.
But we're not here to talk about Evangelion yet. We're going to be here talking about the last two traditional episodes. So let's just dive into it because a lot goes on in this.
Let's do it.
So episode 23, this is Tears and Ray 3. This is a lot. Okay, they're all going to be a lot. Let's just get ahead of that, I guess. Real broadly, it's the second to last angel that we see here and everything that goes along with it. And just everything's just gone to shit.
And let me just say that angel is freaking awesome.
Totally. It like
that is so cool.
It is a giant halo, like in the shape of a double helix. Like, I mean, and it was the term they used, biologically merges with Rey.
Yeah.
It is a cool looking angel. We're gonna have to have a probably discussion once all is said and done what the coolest looking angel was or the coolest angel was. But
yes, absolutely. But let's save that for the very end.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's get back to now that I've distracted us. Sorry.
No distractions. There's no distractions here. Like, it's all worth talking about. So I guess just general swaths of the episode. This is the one where Rey essentially sacrifices herself to save Shinji, and then we have a whole bunch of revelations at the end of this about what's been going on, like of the secrets of Nerve. The biggest thing, at least for me, or maybe not the biggest thing, but like the thing that kind of moved me the most in the episode was really the reveals, not so much in terms of plot, but in terms around Ritsuko. Like, we learn a lot about Ritsuko in this episode. We learn, like, she has been read in on this stuff for quite some time. She knows a lot about what has been going on at Nerve. And more importantly, we learn that she has, I hesitate to call it in a relationship, but she has been, I guess, having sex with Gendo. Like, this weird, strained relationship.
They've been having an illicit affair.
Yes, a tryst, as she would say.
A tryst. But that sounds too romantic for what it seems like is going on.
Totally. I was just thinking back to when like she kind of deprecatingly said that, you know, Misato's ought to have a tryst with Kaji. Maybe that was actually wistfulness in retrospect. Like, no, I kind of want a tryst.
I think so, absolutely. And she made some snide remark in one of the previous episodes about, so are you done playing house now and things aren't looking so good anymore? And I vaguely remembered that she was having a relationship with Gendo from the past, but I didn't remember exactly what the nature of that was or when it would be revealed. So at the time I thought, oh, that's real rich coming from you. But now I realize, oh no, that's her wishing that she had something a little bit more, homey, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit more
intimate.
I was going to say intimate, but I'm also not sure if that's the right word. Like, connecting, maybe, or maybe that's the same kind of.
Yeah, no, mood. I think I meant the exact same thing because she, much like Shinji, up until a certain point, and Rey, I mean, everything she's been doing has been to try to get Gendo's attention. And to get him to favor her, and he keeps turning back to Rey, so it's that connectedness that's missing.
Yeah, I mean, she's almost fooled herself into thinking that it is more than it is.
Yeah, like, he's just using her the same way he used her mother.
And that's an added level of, like, Ritsuko and her mom had a bit of a strained relationship, and the fact that Ritsuko fell into the same trap her mother did with regard to, with the same man, like, that can do a number on your sense of pride. Like, you know, oh, I've gone beyond, like, I'm actually in a relationship with this man as opposed to my mother who was being used by him. And yet, no, it was like, you still fell in the same exact trap. But it was the thing with Rey that really turned her, I think, in this episode. So I forget the exact order of events here, but there was a moment where Ritsuko is called before Seeley. And Gendo sends her. I have no idea why she's naked. I mean, the symbolism is there, but I'm like, I'm not sure of the practical stuff. Like,
right.
No one has been brought before Seeley, like, completely bare-ass naked, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, no. I mean, we haven't seen that. So, yeah, exactly. Metaphor, like, symbolism-wise, makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings some callbacks to times when Rey has been naked. And but, yeah, what in the world? I don't know.
Yeah, it's
are they just a bunch of perverted old men? Like,
not out of the realm of possibility. I mean, they seem to be all business with her, though. They remark on it, but not in a leering way.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a power dynamic kind of way, as opposed to anything else.
Yeah,
and yeah, so she's basically brought before them, and Seeley has been like talking about the nature of They want to get more information about what's going on with regard to Gendo and the dummy system and as part of that, Rey. And I think they allude to the fact that they wanted to talk to Rey, but Gendo straight up sends Ritsuko instead.
I think you're right, yes.
Yeah, and just leaves her out to dry. Like, doesn't prep her. Like, it's got to be a humiliating experience for her, especially because of what comes afterwards. Like... Mm-hmm. In the previous episode, we had seen, or it was a previous episode, I'm not sure it was the exact previous one, but it's when Rey's in that tube and Gendo is being very fatherly towards her or something like that, very affectionate towards her. And then Ritsuko is behind him staring daggers at him. And I'm like, why is that happening? Okay, this is why that was happening. She knows she's a substitute. And I think, as we learn later on about the nature of Rey, like... Rey is Yui in body in some capacity, and she is a replacement for that in the way that her mother was in a lot of ways, and never like the main object of his affection, always a means to an end. And that's what turns her. There is a scene on an escalator where the voiceover is like Seeley saying, like, oh, we sent her back, blah, blah, blah. Let's see how Akari deals with this. They feel that they've kind of gotten one over on him. And she is running down the escalator down into Central Dogma in silence, and her face is just contorting. Like, she's visibly processing on her face, like, okay, he left me out to dry, blah, 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 blah. And that's when she, shortly after, she takes Shinji to see what's been going on.
Not by choice.
Well,
no. She called him down.
Yeah, she called him. She said they're not watching you.
Misato's the one that shows up unexpectedly.
Yeah, Misato like spots it happening because Misato has been kind of.
Interesting. What was her purpose in calling Shinji down for that? Just to have somebody else who knows what's going on?
I think she wanted to hurt Gendo.
Mm-hmm.
Or this is my read on it. I could be wrong on this, but like fully exposing who Rey is and like everything that's been going on at Nerve, all of Gendo's innermost secrets to someone who hates him. Like Shinji has not softened in his feelings for his dad at all. I think there's a knowledge that like we're in the end game here. We are getting very close to the end very quickly. She's like, this is just a blunt force attack on Gendo. And the fact that Misato comes along is, you know, unexpected, but like also part of that, I think, eventually, where she's like, just come with me. I don't know. Looking back on Ritsuko, like, did this surprise you in any way, like her reaction? Like, I mean, or like, does this seem in character for her?
I think it does. I mean, she has always seemed... We've never seen much of what's going on under the surface with her.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a lot of inner monologue. I think we have a few brief moments mm-hmm. where we hear her thoughts. There's a few moments where she opens up to other people. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, she has been a very silent character.
Yeah.
We've had to infer a lot from her silence. And I think that was very intentional. I think that it's been leading up to this moment where we finally see the curtain drawn back and we see what's been going on this whole time. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of allusions, mostly from Misato, allusions to Ritsuko and her cats.
Yes.
And her aloneness.
Mm-hmm.
And in this very episode, we hear about the passing of one of Ritsuko's cats
mm-hmm.
and that shot of her looking at her cat figurines. And we remember the cat mug. There has been a lot of just very pointed commentary on how alone she is and how her companionship has been her cats. And yeah. now we finally find out that that's not entirely true, but basically might as well be.
Well, I mean, the thing with the cats, like, the context is that, like, she sent her cat away to her, I think it was her grandmother's or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So even that, like, very slender connection that she has to another creature is gone and it has been strained for some time. Like,
right.
Like, she's even more isolated than usual.
Yeah, so now even her cat's dead.
Yeah, and now it's dead. And now it's like, now you have nothing. Not to say that her cat dying pushed her off the edge or anything like that, but I think it was...
I think in some small or large way. I mean, cats can be... I don't know what your relationship with your cat is like, but my cat has... I mean, I spend thousands of dollars to get my cat to the vet when he had his urinary infections.
Yeah.
The cat's a part of my family. And for somebody who literally has no one, I can imagine a cat dying when... things are falling apart very quickly could be enough to be that final straw.
I definitely agree. It's just that I think that I don't think it was the death of the cat that was the final straw. Like, it's alluded to that Ritsuko like sent the cat away for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
So that had already been like, even the cat wasn't enough at that point.
Right.
That said, she was probably working long hours and all kinds of stuff. So maybe it was better for the cat, like in the long run. Yeah. Like she's a very lonely person, a very solitary person. You always got the sense that like there is so much going on right underneath the surface that she doesn't let out. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just reminded of a couple of shots at a couple of points when she's working and like you see her or like a shot of her at a computer and right next to her is an ashtray that is loaded with like smoked cigarettes. She is anxious or she is trying to calm down as a result of some stuff. And that's why like this kind of the twitching of her face on the escalator really got me. It's visible emotion. It's visible like struggling. And then like everything in the end of the episode was just like her acting out in a lot of ways and, you know, finally showing out and in the end crumpling down onto her knees and crying, just like straight up like bawling.
Yeah. Which, man, that was heartbreaking. Having seen her be so put together and seemingly content for the entirety of the series so far, that was hard.
There was always kind of a weird stoicism to it, though. Like, it's one of those things, think of it almost like a vase that, you know, is like been glued back together and it's being held together by a wish and a prayer. It's still steady. You can still put stuff in it, but you know, at any moment that thing's going to collapse. That's been my view of Ritsuko, I guess.
I was perhaps more naive.
Well, I don't know if it's a question of naive, but I mean,
hopeful, I guess.
It's yeah, maybe like it's tough to tell. It was very tough to tell with her. Like, she clearly knew, she clearly had plots of her own going on, like around Kaji as well. Like, you know, she was put together in as much as like, I'm remembering that bar scene where she's like, oh, I need to go home. You guys here, have a drink while I go home. Like, she was definitely smart and definitely put together enough that way.
And actually, so a lot of that regards to Ritsuko. Connected to her, there's a lot of other, just a lot of falling apart in this episode in general.
Yeah.
You know, the episode is called Tears.
Yep.
And there are tears from her. There are a lot of, Ray has tears. So, and actually, as we were talking about this, talking about Ritsuko, this is her moment of collapse. Just thinking about this, the episode where Tokyo 3 has also been destroyed, which, you know, just on the surface is enough reason to add that extra match to the fire, as it were. I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah. A lot of breakdowns, like in a lot of ways, and a lot of like it's tears, but not always of sadness. It's tears of or tears of mourning. It's tears of just giving up a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I mean, Ritsuko we talked about, but like Asuka.
Oh my goodness. Asuka. Yes.
Yeah. We'll talk a bit more about her in the next episode because she kind of gets to a head in that next episode, but like she's broken down. Like, she can't even, her Evangelion's not even responding to her anymore. Like, indicating her psychological coherency is just gone at this point.
Right.
But, like, also Rei. Like, there's two incidents with her where she's crying.
And is shocked by that.
Yeah.
You know, we get the impression that she hasn't cried.
Mm.
Not well, since it's all out in the open now. Her, this version of Rei might never have cried before.
Yeah.
And we certainly see with the third Rei that she says that it was new for her.
Yeah.
But that she remembers having done it before and she shouldn't.
Yeah, that's kind of a callback. Like, she cries in the Evangelion when she's about to make that decision to basically self-destruct. It is that callback in a lot of ways to the entry plug scene with Shinji, where she doesn't know how to react yet. Now she's reacting in spite of herself. That was one of those moments where I feel Rei's character development kind of hit its apex with her. We have known Rei as this cold, distant character, but now she cares about something. Cares about Shinji, maybe, probably. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Like, she's had that moment of connection.
So, while we're talking about Rei, I have a question. So, in the discussion that Ritsuko has with Misato and Shinji, and tells them about the true nature of Rei, she says that Rei was the only one that was born with a soul.
Yeah.
Does she mean only the first iteration of Rei as a human? Does she mean Rei as opposed to all the other? I didn't know what to make of that. So does that mean that Rei number 2 and Rei number 3 don't have souls? They do have souls and things that are other than Rei, whatever they may be.
I don't know. I mean, this is the point where my knowledge of what happened is kind of confounded a bit by the languages being used in this episode. So like, when they're talking about a soul, what are they talking about?
Right.
That's very ambiguous, maybe by design, but like, clearly something survives with Rei. Is it the soul? Is it the, I mean, it's clearly not the body, or not entirely the body anyway. But I think when Ritsuko is saying something like only one of these had a soul in it, she's probably referring to that first Rei, the child Rei that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that quote-unquote soul survived, or it was able to be transplanted. But what is the difference between a soul or memories or consciousness? Are they the same thing? Like, I don't...
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one who is at a loss for explaining exactly what's going on.
Again, there's a lot packed into these episodes, and they don't they don't spend as much time talking about it as I would have liked. Because they're talking about it in terms that, like, or Rizuko is anyway, about, like, you know, these are things she's known for a very long time, and she's very used to using this language.
And she's distraught.
And, like, she knows what she's about to do, to destroy all of these. All right, so, like, what is Rey? Like, this is about as close as we're going to get to knowing what the fuck Rey is, whatever it is.
And it's still uncertain. She's apparently human, but also is manufactured in LCL tanks. She is the core of the dummy plug system, which we already knew to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But didn't know that all those times that we were looking at Rey in that weird tube, it wasn't the same Rey that we know.
Yeah.
Which would explain somewhat why she was smiling. Because he told her, let's go get food now. So that was Rey.
I think that was...
Because he wouldn't have said that to an empty Rey husk.
Yeah, I don't. I think he was saying that to... Rey. The Rey we know.
And not Rachel.
And not, like, one of the other husks or whatever it is. Yeah.
Rey body replacements.
Yeah.
Spare parts. Rey spare parts, as Rizuko says.
Yes, spare Reys.
She doesn't even say spare Reys. She says spare parts.
That's right. I mean, that kind of insinuates that, like, almost like in a weird, creepy sense, like, you know, if Rey gets damaged, like, she can grab an arm from a husk here. Mm-hmm. And
that's,
like,
that's the implication I took.
Yeah, totally. So I guess the question is, like,
but why? Why do they need all the extra Rey parts?
Well, I think the extra Reys were meant to be parts for the
Evangelions.
Well, no, the dummy plugs. I think
dummy plugs don't. Do they have to have an actual being inside them?
They have to mimic it. I don't know if they're, like, they need, like, biological parts like the Magi does.
Because didn't he just install the dummy plug, like, software programming into the other entry plugs? That's how it was able to take over when Shinji wasn't doing what he wanted to.
Sure, but there is a, like, a thing within the cockpit that says, like, dummy plug system Rey. And that might have some, like, the equivalent of a biological hard drive that is used. Mm-hmm. So maybe some of the dummies were repurposed for that.
Ugh, so confusing.
Totally, totally. Like, this makes the most sense with what we know. Like, I think Gendo made Rey. And I think he made a bunch extra Reys until he found one that worked. Or until one that had, quote-unquote, a soul.
Mm-hmm.
Although maybe not all of one. Like, we have seen Asuka's mom, like, lost part of her mind or soul or what have you. And maybe that was the same with Rey. Like, she didn't have an entire soul. Maybe... I'm really spitballing at this point. Like,
yes, I am very skeptical. But okay, that's no less information than I have, so...
I think the important thing here is that, like, the Rey we know, like, it's not another clone. I think it is Rey. Like, she clearly has some gaps in her memory from what happened during the Evangelion, but, like, she still retains memories, even on a subconscious level. Like, she does cry when she gets back to her apartment. So she does remember these things.
Oh, yeah. And she knows whose glasses those are sitting on her cabinet, whatever, cart.
Yeah. Yeah, her little...
She knows who people are. She knows who Shinji is.
There's certainly things she's lost. Maybe it's just, like, a rebooting process or something like that. But I think there is some... There may be at least some substance left from the Rey that we've been with these entire episodes, because there's that scene with when they recover the entry plug.
Mm-hmm.
They don't show anything, but Ritsuko is there and she's like, this is now top secret. Clearly there was a way to maybe transmigrate part of Rey that was in there. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe in some way her consciousness is tied into the dummy plug system that But the but that plug was open, which means there was no LCL left in it because it had been ruptured. So who knows?
Yeah,
maybe it's not important. I mean, maybe at this point we are trying to figure out something that the directors never intended for us to figure out because it's not important to the point that they're trying to make.
No, maybe not. I think the important point is that, like, it is the same Ray, and that, like, the fact that there are so many of them, there's so many backups, shows Gendo's kind of obsession with his wife. Because Rey is, at least in her image, I'm not sure of her body in any way, but, like, sure as hell seems that way. The only other thing I wanted to mention is, like, as part of the descent into that whole dummy plug system, we see the artificial evolution laboratory. And that's, like, it looks like Rey's apartment. And this is where she was born. This was where she was raised. Like, very, very weird. The one thing that I wasn't quite able to make sense of is in that room, there is a bunch of graffiti. And it, from what I saw, it said, you know, there's a bunch of stuff, top, bottom, strangeness, and what looked like some chemical symbols. I looked up some of this stuff. So the chemical symbols, I couldn't make any headway on either way. But top, bottom, strangeness, these are like properties of quarks.
Right.
So like she is constructed on an almost subatomic level.
That didn't even register. I think at that point I was just so like overwhelmed that I didn't even notice that. The graffiti. Yeah. So
it could be mystery for the sake of mystery. Maybe it pays off later, but I don't. Yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think at this point they're just throwing in whatever they can to make it confusing. And
I feel it has to have some meaning, but maybe I am giving them too much credit. I don't know. I'm
there's something to do with, so that last angel is pure light. But it's also substance, but it's also light. So there could be something to do with something in this episode that has to do with matter and light and energy. And I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we know that the angels are like particle wave matter or whatever the hell. Right.
This angel in particular has the weird, it shifts between pattern blue, which is the traditional angel pattern, whatever that means. And pattern orange, which is the one we've only seen in the ones where a Dirac C appears. I think there were two different angels that had a pattern orange.
Yeah.
And so this is the first one that's shifted between the two in one single entity. And so what does that mean? There's something unusual going on here. This is a brand new kind of angel that is entirely different than anything else.
They are evolving. And like, as when we get to the very last angel, like it, which is kind of the apex of the evolution of the angels here. Again, we've seen the past couple of angels try to understand humanity in a number of ways. And even when we get to the next episode, you know, in another kind of way, maybe they're becoming more human.
Oh, well, and isn't this the episode that the angel directly communicates with Rey? We haven't talked about that.
The thing about that is that, like, I'm not sure if whenever we've seen, like, these conversations happening within the Evangelions and things like that, like, Shinji's been through it twice now, I think. And Asuka, that one very stressful time. It's never 100% sure if they're talking to the angel or not. I think that's by design. Like, we don't necessarily know. Or if they're talking to other parts of their psyche.
In this case, I mean, it seemed like if it was another part of Rey's psyche, it was so far removed from any part of Rey that we've ever seen. That's what made me think that it was actually the angel communicating, because the voice was so different than Rey's voice. In the past, it's always been, you know, Shinji, two parts of Shinji that we've experienced before having a dialogue with each other, which made it more vague. You know, is this just Shinji having an inner dialogue with himself, or is it the angel? Yeah. And that could be. It could be that we're finally getting a glimpse into a side of Rei that we didn't know existed and she didn't know existed. But it seemed to me, it felt at least, that it was actually at this point the angel saying, because it was saying things like, you know, join with us. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think I wrote down any of the things that it actually said, but it was using language that seemed to be coming from outside Rei.
I think it was definitely coming from outside Rei in some, or like, or even if it was just a catalyst or something like that. But you're right. It is probably a different entity, because I had forgotten this. The other Rei that is talking, like when she speaks, there's a lot of reverb on her voice. There's a lot of like, you know, this is not Rei talking to herself. This is Rei talking to something else about her.
Yeah. Something that's using her, an image of her, mm-hmm. to reflect herself back at her.
But the thing that I thought about it could be, aside from the angel, is that maybe it's the Evangelion.
It could be.
Because that's the thing that, like, that's the weird black hole here, is we don't know, like, we know that Yui Ikari is in Eva 01. Mm-hmm. Part of Asuka's mom is in Eva 02. We don't know what's in Rei's Evangelion. Mm-hmm. Is it Rei? Like, is it like maybe there was another? There's a point at which Ritsuko says, like, you know, the Evangelions are things without a soul, and she kind of gestures to the other Reis, like, these are also mm-hmm. things without a soul. Like, is Eva 01 just a bigger Rei? Like,
because Rei's all the way down.
God, Rei's all the way down. I mean, because if you think about it, like, before Eva Unit 00 explodes, it turns into what looks like a gigantic Rei. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a brief little shot of that. So is she talking to another version of herself?
Mm, that's interesting. I don't know. Part of what also made me think that it was the angel is the fact that the angel is, at that point, as we said, biologically fusing with Rei,
yeah.
while she's having that conversation.
That's true.
And then the next angel we see takes human form.
True.
Which makes me think that this is the point at which the angel has finally gotten enough information to be able to take on a fully human form.
Maybe. I mean, the next angel is a little bit of a special case, though. But I think, like, all things being equal, like, probably the simplest explanation is that, like, this is the angel. Because it talks to Shinji at one point in Rei's voice, like, stop hurting mm-hmm. me. And the little rays appearing on his hands, which is creepy as fuck.
Yeah, that was so creepy.
Yeah, so yeah, this is one of those things that, like, this could have been like a 4-episode arc to, like, unpack everything that's happening in this, I think. Yeah,
it's insane. There's so much going on. But in some ways it's fitting, because everything is falling apart very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And that is mirrored by the fact that we're getting everything thrown at us very quickly.
There's definitely a like the apocalypse is next week kind of feel to this, and like
next week, I'd say tomorrow.
Well, yeah. I'm being generous because of everything else that's been going on. Like, Celia and Gendo's relationship is breaking down. Mm-hmm. There's angels fucking everywhere, and they're way more intrusive than they used to be. Yeah.
So the other thing, moving on from Rei a little bit, if you're ready.
Sure.
I don't know if there's much more to say about this, but some of the other so the other people that are dealing with intimacy and walls. So we've got Shinji, who mm-hmm. is like, I don't even know what to do about Asuka, and his wall, and Rei, he doesn't know what to do about Rei. Mm-hmm. And I guess we'll get to him next episode and his mm-hmm. his moments of connection and intimacy with others.
Yeah.
But then there is Asuka, who finally has a moment of like real connection with another person. It doesn't help her at all.
True.
But she does open up and admit the things that she's never admitted to anyone other than herself.
Yeah. Yeah. Class rep. You're referring to that scene,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Who does class rep have a name?
I did look it up. She does have one and I can't remember it. I don't think it's ever said in the series.
Okay. Okay. Class rep. So, yeah, I don't know if there's really anything to say about that, though. But it just, as I was thinking about all the crying and not crying and people forming connections and connections breaking apart, that was in there, too.
Like, Asuka is very clearly looking for some kind of, well, she's looking for distraction. Like, she's playing video games, I think on a Saturn, that's me. I recognize these things. In Class Rep's apartment. Incidentally, I just looked up. Hikari Horaki is her name, apparently.
Oh, yeah. She does call her Hikari at some point.
Yeah. But everything is like, yeah, no, she's Class Rep. But, like, she's trying to distract herself. But then that moment, like, where she's sleeping and Class Rep is very, like, she wants to be there for her. And, like, be a comforting figure for Asuka. But Asuka, I don't think, wants consolation. She wants to feel miserable. Like, it's one of those classic depression things. No matter how much you, like, you are there for someone, for a depressed person, sometimes they can't control it.
Yeah, I don't know if want is the right word. I think she doesn't know how. I think she's at the point where there's not anything anybody can do that would snap her out of it.
I mean, that's certainly part of it. She's been building this up her entire life. You know, this is her sense of worth, and now it's gone. And, like, having been, like, very seriously depressed at times, there is a feedback loop that happens at some point you are so depressed and you get comforted in it, and you are just so down so damn low, it doesn't matter how many people are there for you.
Right. Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what I mean by that, is it's falling on deaf ears.
Yeah. Yeah, very
she
much
she can't
so.
Receive that from anyone.
This is where Asuka's isolation really comes back to bite her. Like, she's never even practiced this. And, like, when she needs it the most, she can't make that connection anymore.
Yeah.
There was one other weird connection thing that I wanted to bring up, because this seemed like a curveball, and I just so it's
Are
after
we gonna
Ray
talk about Pen Pen again.
Oh, we will. This is actually somewhat tied into Pen Pen.
Okay.
So it actually involves Misato. Like, after Ray dies and Shinji is just kind of shell shocked, like, Ray's dead, you know, before the whole thing of, you know, oh no, she actually didn't, or did she, kind of thing. Shinji is just kind of shocked, sitting on his bed, and Misato comes in, and I read it as, like, she makes a pass at him.
Like, I think grabs that he might have interpreted it that way. But
I
also read it that way at first, and then was like, that doesn't seem right. Like, would she really do that? I don't think she would.
But she's talking in terms that are, like, you know, something that can take away the pain or something. And it's just like,
I think all she said was, well, to him, all she said was, this is all I can offer you, and reaches out a hand, which could be, I mean, I guess it could be interpreted that way, especially since they're sitting on his bed, but also he's sitting on his bed because he's upset, and she could just be reaching out for support.
Maybe he interpreted it that way, and, like, and maybe that was not, maybe I'm reading Misato's intention wrong here. I it seems so out of character for her to do that.
Right, which is why I think, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think he is just so done with everything that he, I don't know.
Well, here's the promised Pen Pen reference. Like, after that's after that's done, she goes out and, like, you know, goes to Pen Pen, like actually there's a weird thing in, like, just the line delivery there. He's like sing-songy talking to Pen, like, almost like I talk to my cat, you know, like, you know. There's not a lot of gravitas, like, there. She's like, you know, here, Pen Pen. Pen just kind of looks over and is like, what? No. not casting aspersions on Pen in any way. But like Misato kind of takes that as like, she's like, I just need a connection here. Like, this is me reaching out. I'm not doing this for their benefit. I'm doing it for my own, which I can sort of see. She's lost Kaji. She's lost Rei. Like, I can understand the need of wanting to feel something or mm-hmm. to reconnect with people or things or pets. It just gets weirder. Her character in the next episode takes a little bit of a weird turn at the end as well, which is why I'm like, I'm really puzzling over what happens with Misato in these.
Well, you're going to have to tell me what you mean, because I don't know specifically what you're referring to. So maybe we should just move on to the next episode.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, because like, this is all about the interpersonal dynamic. So the next episode is The Last Cometh / The Beginning and the End, or Knocking on Heaven's Door, which is a mouthful. So there's a lot going on with this episode, but the big thing here is the fifth child, or the last angel, as we find out, Kaoru Nagisa. Kaoru is a fascinating character, just to me, at least. Mm-hmm. Not least because he seems to be, I don't know, he seems to have transcended like a lot of things. I mean, he's, you know, angel and human and all that. Like, he is kind of the culmination of everything mm-hmm. that has been happening with mm-hmm. the angels. But he is also someone that Shinji needed at this moment. Like, mm-hmm. precisely at this moment, he needed a friend. And he gets that and more, maybe? I think we kind of need to talk about it, because there... And I'm going to preface this by saying, like, I don't really I may not be equipped to talk about this in the way that it needs to be talked about, mm-hmm. because I'm going to be talking about, like, this, the relationship between Kaoru and Shinji is just gay as hell. Like, I mean, like, there's no other way to put it. Like, it is so, there's so much homoerotic undertones to these that watching it now, when I initially watched it, I kind of thought of like, I didn't know enough about like queer coding and things like that. I thought it was just kind of Kaoru, he's this otherworldly thing. So like, he's being I'm trying to think of how to put it, but like outwardly sexual mm-hmm. towards Shinji, mm-hmm. Because he didn't know any better. But like, clearly looking at it now, like, there's definitely more to it than that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think there are a lot of different levels that it could, I don't know if levels, but I think there's some things.
Totally. And I think at this point, we also have to talk about a little bit, like, this was, I remember when Eva was released on Netflix and there was this big controversy about Kaoru in particular.
Yeah, I've decided those people are dumb after having seen this.
No, it's still gay as hell. Like, I mean, there's no two ways about it. But like, I did read a little bit about like during that time. It's like kind of the prevailing thought was like, yeah, people are arguing about this, but people have argued about Evangelion for 20 years. Like, this is nothing new. Mm-hmm. Just to put a pin on it, like, there were some concerns that there was some queer erasure going on here with Kaoru because right. some of the lines had changed.
Right. I remember that being the center of the controversy, which I didn't remember Kaoru's character at that point and wasn't going to look more into it. But, you know, having quickly glanced at the screenshots of the offensive content, I was like, okay, maybe we'll see. And now that I've actually watched it, like, yeah. I don't think even if they did, I think one of the main ones is he says that he, like Shinji says, no one has said they ever loved me before. He said he loved me. Mm-hmm. I don't think that changes the potential nature of their, not relationship, but interactions so much as it changes the tone of it a little bit to one that's more, almost more suitable for the amount of time that they've known one another.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it diminishes it at all.
I don't think it does.
No, and it may actually accentuate it. The idea that Kaoru is showing affection to Shinji, whether it is like romantic affection or not, is something that Shinji has never experienced. Whether the word you use there is either like or love, like both carry a similar amount of weight in the context of this episode, mm-hmm. and it's. I'm also thinking of like what it was like to be a teenager. It's like, oh, someone likes me.
Right. Yeah, that's the implication there. Yeah. It's not just, oh yeah, I like you, you're cool. It's, hey, I like you. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And clearly that is the chemistry that's happening between those two characters right then. Shinji is blushing. Kaoru is definitely giving him some moon eyes, or not moon eyes, because he's not mooning over Shinji, but he's definitely giving him some very adoring, admiring glances.
Like affection, appreciation.
Pointed yeah. looks. And what I find is very interesting is in all of this that he has been sent by Seeley. Like it is no accident that he is there at that exact moment.
Like his agenda is very murky here, because is it Seeley's? Is it his own? Or like did Shinji change his mind? Or like,
I think it's a combination of the two. I think that he knows that he has been sent for a mission. Mm-hmm. You know, that scene where the first time that we ever see Seeley conversing with anybody outside of their little dark meeting room. They meet with him in the middle of wherever that is. Is that what's left of Tokyo 3? Or past that?
I think it was the crater left behind by Rei's destruction.
Which is what's left of Tokyo 3, I think.
Well, Tokyo 3 is not fully well, it's certainly the remains of like a good chunk of Tokyo 3, certainly.
Okay, well, either way, some ruins.
I'm splitting hairs.
Out in the middle of some water. And he makes it, you know, it's clear that he knows that he's there for a purpose and he's going to a certain degree, carry that out. I think at the very end, he turns from that mission, but it seems to me that his interactions with Shinji are, yeah, I guess combination of mission from Seeley and his own. Yeah, it's hard to say. You're right.
I mean, because we don't really get a clear picture of what Kaoru was sent to do. Like,
right.
I mean, he's clear. Like, Seeley knows he's an angel. Like, I think. Because there's that scene at the lake where they're talking with him and, they're just straight up saying, like, they say something to the effect of, like, you know, the children of Adam need to come out on top on this. And
he talks about, he specifically talks about the Lilin, although I don't know if that was, I think that's after they finish talking.
He uses it a lot, actually.
Does he? He
uses it in
the
first conversation with Shinji, but he uses it, like, in a damn every conversation, I think.
Which I had to actually look up what in the world that meant.
What did you find?
Oh, it basically means, well, I think I ended up looking up on Evangelion wikis that it said it refers to humanity, but specifically what I pieced together is just when with his discovery that the being in the basement that we've assumed is Adam this whole time was actually Lilith.
Yeah.
Lilin, it makes sense that that would just be a derivative of, you know, children of Lilith.
Clearly, he refers to his body as, like, he is an angel. So he has the soul of Adam, maybe? I'm not quite sure. The body of a Lilin, like, of Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like, you know, that thing in the basement of Nerve is Lilith. And the fact that we saw previously that, like, there were, like, legs and stuff coming out of Lilith before, like, human legs and stuff like that, like, indicates that maybe she's kind of a progenitor to humanity.
Right.
This is the thing, though. With Seeley, like, they deliberately sent Kaoru. Like, they deliberately, like, to basically strike a blow at Gendo and, like, almost accelerate how fast they're getting to third impact.
Right.
I think even Gendo at one point says, like, the old man is trying to skip a step here. But I don't know if that was... I don't know if they expected Kaoru to start Third Impact, because they may have known that, well, I guess, let's step back even further. Because to initiate Third Impact, what we've always thought is that, like, when an angel reaches, quote-unquote, Adam. Right. But an angel does reach Lilith here.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, Kaoru recognizes he can't start Third Impact, or, like, he can't do what he came here to do.
Does he, or does he realize that he doesn't want to, because he gives Shinji a choice?
Well, sort of, like, because, like, in the beginning, like, when he gets into Terminal Dogma, like, he, you know, Shinji is fighting Evo 02, and what's his name? Kaoru just makes a beeline for Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
I think he, like, was intending to care, like, he had a purpose. I think he is, to some extent, he has to fulfill his purpose. Like, it is his nature. He doesn't necessarily want to.
Right.
But he can't stop himself. And I think that's why he turns to Shinji and says, kill me.
Right. Because
if you don't, like, humanity's going to be destroyed.
Yes. That's also the impression I was given.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you said that you didn't think that he could fulfill that purpose.
I think with what was present in Terminal Dogma at that moment, I don't think they had what they needed.
Mm. Okay.
Otherwise, I think Kaoru would have done it. I don't know what was missing, because we have Lilith, we have Adam, or a child of Adam, the soul of Adam, but in a Lilith body, or a Lilin body, I should say.
What about that weird eye thing that was in Gendo's hand? And they make some reference to Adam in relation to Gendo.
I kind of know what that is.
Okay. Well, don't spoil it for me.
Well, I think it can be inferred at this point, though, if you think about it. I'm not going to say it, but, like, it's a little bit of a stretch, but I think you can figure out what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say it. The other thing that kind of struck me about what was going on there, like, I think that Kaoru knew that he couldn't do it. Like, he was doing what he was told to do, and he was doing what his mission did, but I think he knew that that was Lilith there. My read on it, and I could be wrong here, is that he sees Lilith and says, no, this isn't Adam, this is Lilith, and then he looks and sees Rey, who is somehow in Terminal Dogma at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's telling her. Like, I think he's saying to her that, like, no, this isn't right.
Interesting.
Because there's that weird conversation he had with her before, like, oh, we're the same thing. Like, I think he recognizes something to, you know, like, oh, you're also, what does he say exactly? We're both in this body or something like that.
Yeah, I don't remember, but he definitely says we're the same thing.
We're the same thing. He recognizes something about Rey, and, like, oh, here, I have the quote here. We both settled as the same type of body, same body type of the Lilin to survive. Like, he's saying that, like, we're both of a different form, but we're not human per se, mm-hmm. but we have human bodies. Does that mean Rey's an angel? I don't know. Like, again, this is so weirdly all over the place. How many parts are, like there's a body of Adam, but is there, but Kaoru has the soul of Adam, but the body of a Lilin, but is that the body of Lilith? Where's the soul of Lilith? Is that Yui? Like I don't.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, maybe we're not supposed to. Maybe they're just throwing around language and we're not supposed to be able to track with it all.
Maybe more will be revealed. And I do know that there is more revealed in End of Evangelion, but I don't quite know how much. So we'll get to that when we get to it. But I think the important part is that Kaoru connects with Shinji.
He does.
And whether that changes his mind or not, I think it's important to Shinji to know that he was liked, loved, whatever the word you want to use is. And yet Kaoru betrays him. And like, I think at one point Shinji's like, just like my father did. Yet he doesn't seem angry at Kaoru afterwards. He just seems sad.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means for Shinji. Maybe he's just done. Maybe he's just shell-shocked at this point, but like, yeah.
Well, he doesn't seem to harbor any resentment towards Kaoru, because at the end, in that last scene where he's talking with Masato, he is saying that of the two of us, if one of us had to die, it should have been me. Kaoru is better than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not the words of somebody who is resentful of, yeah, what he sees as, if he does see it as betrayal, he's not holding it against him.
Yeah, absolutely. But what's interesting to me is that that's what I was talking about with regard to Masato, what he says after that.
Oh, which is, yeah.
Only those with the will to live get to survive. That is very, like...
It's very Gendo-like.
Yeah, very much so. I think Masato at this point has kind of given over herself over to ruthless practicality in a way. Like, she's not...
Mm-hmm.
She's not as warm. She's not as nurturing as she was. I think at this point, maybe she's been hardened by the death of Kaji and everything else that's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
We used to say about Masato that, like, when she's on, she's on. Mm-hmm. Now she's just, like... She has that Gendo, like, absolute unanimity of purpose, and she is going for it.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting there is Shinji, even though he knows now that Kaoru is not human, or at least not fully human, I think he still thinks of him as a preteen boy. That is how he related to him. Whereas Masato, being older and more adult, you know, didn't have the opportunity to even relate to him that way, you know, can see him as he is, as an angel, as otherworldly. And regardless, she didn't have the same sort of connection to Kaoru that Shinji did. Yeah. You know, there wasn't that companionship and close familiarity. At that point, they're talking about two different beings, basically.
Yeah.
You know, she's talking about Kaoru the angel, Kaoru the being that was able to move an Evangelion just by being in the same room as it.
Yeah.
That can sync with any Eva he wants and shift his synchronization rates at will. Which I don't know if she knew that, but that's the sort of being that she knows that Kaoru to be. And Shinji sees Kaoru as the boy that I shared a room with and slept on the floor next to him, and he told me he liked me.
Yeah. It's someone who wanted to get to know me.
Yeah, somebody who, to a certain degree, knew me.
Mm.
I think when Masato is talking about only those with the will to live do so, her coldness has to do partly with the fact that she's talking about otherworldly beings. And also, I think you're right. I think that at that point, I mean, she's seen Ritsuko fall apart. She's seen Asuka fall apart. She's seen Kaji gone. You know, one after another, she's seen the people around her fall prey to the madness that is Gendo and Seelie and Nerve.
Yeah, like... She's never really tried to sympathize with the angels in any capacity. Like, she's always been like, what's the most efficient way to kill these things?
Right.
Yeah, maybe she does view Kaoru as a, by and large, like an abomination, because he took the form of a human. And like, she's always been on the side of humanity and like, oh, like, all the more reason to utterly exterminate these things. There is an edge of ruthlessness to it now that, like, probably has been honed by the fact that everything's going to hell, which I'm sad to see. Like, Masato has been a very, she's a very real person. She's a very, like, human person.
Yeah.
She makes mistakes. She admits them. She's emotional. She cries. She sometimes makes decisions that she regrets, like, and now she's becoming an instrument. Like, she's mm-hmm. becoming a, you know, this thing corrupts everybody. At the same time that, like, Ritsuko, like, who has been an instrument for this whole series, has kind of gone the exact opposite way. Like, become a broken person and, you know, someone who is way more emotional than she was, like, two episodes ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Goddamn. I had forgotten about this turn that Misato takes. I mean, you know, and it's not quite done yet, but, like, it makes me sad. Like, it really does.
Yeah, no, that was an unpleasant moment.
Speaking of which, I want to also talk a little bit about Asuka.
Ugh.
This is how it's gonna be. That opening scene, like, where she's in, like, a bombed out building, I think, or something like that, in a tub, and
mm-hmm.
like the water in the tub is red. I think it's showing without showing that, like, she slit her wrists. Like, I think she was trying to commit suicide.
Oh, I just thought it was rust. I didn't think there was any water in it. I thought it was empty.
Oh, I thought it. I kind of got the impression of it because it was reddish. Well, I guess I viewed it as.
Let us look that up.
Well, I think also, like, but even aside from that, like, she had folded her clothes and, like, left them there, like, almost like a ritualistic passing into the new world, like, you know, kind of a trope of suicide in media.
I just assumed it was a bloody bottom of a bathtub, but, or not bloody, rusty.
I mean, also, it's also entirely possible that the animators wanted to leave that up to your imagination. I leave it ambiguous.
Okay, so apparently other people have also questioned what's going on in that image. Some people thought that it was just dirty water. And there is water there. It's not an empty tub like I thought.
Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily, like, I don't know if there's a quote-unquote canonical answer to this or whatnot, but, like, it's meant to evoke that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a feeling of this is it for, like, Asuka's yeah. broken beyond repair at this point. But they don't give the impression, as they're saying, you know, hey, we've recovered Asuka. They don't give the impression, we've recovered Asuka and she is badly injured.
Well, she's in the hospital at one point, though. Like, there's a shot of her in a hospital bed. And again, like, it's not definitive, but, like, also the scene that leads into the discovery of Asuka is Asuka discovering her mom's body.
Right.
Irrelevant as to whether or not she really tried to. Clearly, the upshot is that she's done. Like, she has been utterly broken. Like, everything that has gone on, everything that has happened to her has just kind of just shattered her. It's one of those things that looked like, and it calls to mind, like, these are literally child soldiers. Like, these are people on the front line of a war, and they cannot deal with the fallout of it. I mean, even that image of her running to her mom, like, I get to be an EVA pilot, is immediately, like, countermanded by the fact that, like, her mother died. She's feeling really good about herself and that kind of stuff. Like, there's no glory in piloting an Evangelion. There's no glory in being in this war. It's just that she may be saving the world quite literally, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
Because she never made right by herself. I've said this a lot, but Asuka, like, again, I've never really liked, but man, she is done real badly by everybody. And it's insinuated that Seeley did this to some degree. Like, there's some talk about, like, you know, we're trying to hurt Gendo, so Asuka's caught in the crossfire on this.
Mm.
Everybody's treating these kids as tools.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know what else there is to say about that.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say about it. It's a heartbreaking scene, and because we know from the beginning, like, knowing what her backstory is, that there was no good ending for Asuka here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. This is the moment where, I mean, there have been a couple of moments where it seems like, okay, now she's done. But now she's really done. Like, regardless of whether what she has slit her wrists or not, she's definitely intending to this is the end for her. This is how she's going to go out, either through just starving, you know, wasting away to nothing. Like, she has no care, no will to live, no will to do anything at this point.
Yeah.
And they're certainly not going to be rehabilitating her.
No, they may still use her, but like...
Well, they may try.
Yeah. This is not a glorious show. Like, this is not a show about, like, how great it... Again, this ain't Gundam, where it's fun to, like, pilot giant robots
right, or whatnot. This is the exact opposite. This is the subversion of that.
Subversion or almost more realistic portrayal of it. Like, this isn't a happy kid both. Show.
Both, I think.
Yeah, no, totally. Man.
So,
all right. So, there's still a lot in this episode. I mean, I feel that we haven't talked about. But like, is there anything in particular you wanted to talk about?
No, I mean, as I was writing my show notes here and trying to come up with what I wanted to talk about, really, my first reaction was just, what the hell did we just watch?
Yeah.
And then fair. I tried to come up with something thematic to say, but really it was mostly just that we watched a whole lot and I don't understand. And I think I've mostly just come to the conclusion that it's okay if I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to be able to parse everything that happened.
You mean plot-wise, though? Like, I mean...
Yeah, plot-wise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in terms of emotionally and character interaction, I guess one thing I did want to talk about was... And just in passing, how I was glad for Misato that she was able to move out of the depression that she was in. Clearly, she doesn't know for sure that Kaji is dead and is hoping beyond hope that he will call her.
Yeah.
Listening to his voicemail again and again.
Yeah.
But then at one point, she bucks up and says, you know what? It's time to move on. It's time to stop waiting and use the information that he's given me, which now we know what that pill was.
Mm-hmm.
It was all the information that he had gathered.
It's a weird way to transfer it, but sure.
Hey, you know, he's going to do it in a way that is not going to be suspicious.
Oh, he said he tried like 36 other ways or something like that too. So yeah, fair enough.
And now she makes that statement of, I'm not going to wait anymore for a phone that doesn't ring.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, is a callback to episode 3, the phone that never rings. But in that case, it was Shinji not having friends because I have your heart within me, which was just this moment for me. Like, it wasn't meant to be a, aw, that's so sweet, but it was meant to be a, that's powerful. You know, she is able to deal with Kaji being gone because she realizes, like, the most important thing about him at the end there was his search for the truth, and he has given her that to take on herself.
Like, he literally gave her everything that he was. Like,
yeah,
that connection was way deeper than I think. Well, maybe they knew, but like, I think Misato, in better times, this could have been a real love story, but unfortunately it was this time. I'm thinking of it almost like, you know, he says to her in that last voicemail, like, you know, if I ever see you again, I'll say the words I couldn't say to you 8 years ago. The implication being it's, I love you. Like, and this is her basically understanding that, you know, his heart is now inside her.
Our listeners can't see this, but I'm making a very sad pouty face right now.
To be fair, I hope our listeners are too. There is really so much going on here that's just... Like, we've spent 24 episodes with these people, and you can't help but care about them. The fact that they're, like, there is no happy ending here. This is not a fairy tale. It absolutely kills me, and...
Yeah, I wish that we had started this episode with our initial reactions.
Mm-hmm.
In case people hadn't looked at our Twitter.
Yeah, we've been passing back and forth animal pictures.
On Saturday after I watched the episode, that was the Mike sent me cute dog pictures to look at after I said that I was feeling super anxious after watching that last episode. And it absolutely did help.
Yeah.
I felt so much better after looking at those dogs.
I actually, after, so I sent that to you. You would watch the episodes first and I sent that to you. And then after I watched the episodes, I like went back through my message history. I'm like, okay, I need this now. Like,
that's perfect.
Yeah, it did help. It wasn't like, I mean, it's not going to erase it. It's going to take the edge off, but like.
No. I needed to go out and be in the sunshine and work on some other things. And yeah, that helped. Getting some coffee helped. I hadn't had coffee at that point either, which didn't.
Jesus.
Help. Yeah. I will not be making that mistake again.
No, totally. I recently moved and it took me a little bit to find like a decent coffee place. So there were a couple of days I was not caffeinated this week. So I'm like, okay, that can't go on. Yeah, all right. So
I don't have anything else I want to talk about with these episodes.
I mean, there's stuff like real quick, just in terms of like, it seems almost just ancillary to everything else or like to the core of what like really resonated here, but like that we could talk about, like, you know, I have written here, like, you know, Kaoru as a Christ figure, like sacrificing himself for humanity. Totally, like, Abel just rolled her eyes. Like, it's very heavy-handed, and it's very... And
this is me as the Christian in the room.
No, totally. It is very on the nose, like, sacrificing himself to literally save humanity as opposed to, you know, the sinfulness of humanity. But I don't know. I you know, and all the imagery of like, oh yeah, when Kaoru breaks through into Terminal Dogma, it's like, oh, you know, heaven's door is open, like indicating we're getting very close to a paradise. All right, you know what? I don't even care about that shit anymore.
and that's the thing, this whole time I've been like, they're just laying it on so heavy with that imagery, and to me it's the least interesting part of this whole thing.
Totally.
And I wonder if some of that is just being more adult and having, I mean, we've had now 18 more years of anime. So maybe some of that is just what was revolutionary at the time that Evangelion originally came out is now just old hat.
Very much so. I think it, like, there was a certain novelty to, like, oh, it's actually using Christian tropes in a way that, like, Western media hasn't.
Right.
That said, it was like, again, a lot of the Christian imagery was weirdly incidental or like not used to great effect. And then so the moments where it does seem used to great effect, like it seems like almost a coincidence.
I do like the repeated use of the Hallelujah chorus.
Yeah.
That was extremely powerful. And even the fact that Kaoru is humming it.
Yeah.
Earlier in the episode. That got me. At first, I didn't recognize it. I'm like, I know this music. Mm-hmm. Why do I know this music? And then I had to think back. Oh, right. It's that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
the same thing that they play a lot in both this episode and there's another episode, too. Is it two episodes ago?
So what happened? The Asuka episode where her mind's getting invaded?
Yes.
That's the Hallelujah chorus that's being played. In this, it's actually Ode to Joy. They're very similar.
Oh, you're right.
Musically. But they're like, I actually, when I in my notes for the previous episode, I'm like, oh, the angel's attacking to the tune of the Ode to Joy. And then when you said Hallelujah chorus, I'm like, oh no, right. It is that. It's not. but yeah, yes, there's like,
thank you. I should know that too.
You know, they're very lyrically similar. The only reason I knew it was Ode to Joy was, and this is going to really date me, I recognize the tune from Sister Act 2.
yes.
Lauryn Hill singing that, which is a great, great version of that. But still, there's all kinds of other allusions to it. Like, you know.
Don't they have it in Home Alone, too?
They might.
I think there's a part where they play that as the bad guys are getting their butts kicked or something.
It wouldn't surprise me. I think I read somewhere it's like one of the most used pieces of music ever.
That makes sense. It's very recognizable. It has a very specific tone to it if you're looking to have that particular impact.
And most importantly, it's public domain.
And it's public domain. Yes.
Alrighty, I think we're kind of we're coming out the other end on this thing. Let's wrap this up. So I we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but like what was your overall impression of these episodes?
I mean, we talked about how there was just so much packed into these episodes. They were full. It was hard to keep track of what we were supposed to be taking away from it. Even having the words on the screen in front of me, I could not parse all the pieces of the puzzle that I was supposed to be putting together.
Absolutely, yeah.
But that being said, visually and thematically and emotionally, they were extremely, extremely impactful. Mm. I went away feeling all sorts of emotions that I was not enjoying at all.
No, totally.
Spent several hours being an anxious mess. Even posted about it on Facebook and had people say, really? I don't remember being that upset about it. I was like, well, you're heartless. No, I didn't say that.
No, I know.
But it made me think about how much story affects me more than maybe some other people. And in terms of my favorite episodes, the other thing we talk about at this portion of the show, really, I think I had two. One of them was that scene in the Central Dogma. Mm-hmm. Or is that even Central Dogma or not Central, Terminal Dogma? Is Terminal that further? Dogma. Is Terminal Dogma even further down in the basement?
Yeah, Terminal Dogma is where the Eva Graveyard, Lilith, all that is.
Ritsuko shows Misato and Shinji the Eva Graveyard, but they don't see Lilith.
Yeah.
So anyways, but that scene where everything is being revealed to them down in the basement there, that was a big deal. And then again, that moment of Misato sitting there deciding that she's not going to be listening for the phone to ring anymore, that she has Kachi in her heart. She doesn't need to wait for him anymore. Yeah, that got me in the feels, as they say. As the kids say these days. What about you?
For me, it's like, I mean, my overall impression is that, like, you know, part of the reason these, I think that these affected us, and we talked about this a little bit last episode, is that we have time to dwell on these. Like, we're not binging through these.
Right.
So every moment is just has way more weight to it. But even with that, I think, I mean, just from a pacing point of view, these episodes seem way too rushed, like in terms of like, this is kind of a cynical way to look at it, but like, it seems like they were running out of money. Like, it seems like that they were like, we need to tie this up now.
Which is interesting because 26 episodes is a typical arc.
Totally.
So it's not like they knew that it's not like, oh crap, we're getting cut off. Like, they knew this was the number of episodes they were getting, unless they didn't. And unless the 26 episode arc wasn't a thing yet at that point.
I'm not certain. I don't think they were running out of money. Because from what I remember, like, this was kind of a hit, like, during the time it was airing. Mm-hmm. It just seems like, especially with Kaoru, like, I really want so much more of him. Like, I wanted to know more about, I mean, it feels like his and Shinji's relationship happens in an afternoon. It's impactful, but it's like, draw it out. It feels a little perfunctory in like it happens and then nothing. I feel that like I would have been ecstatic to see like that develop even more.
So one of the things that I think about with that is that if he is, you know, as they're calling him, the last angel. I guess there were some episodes that we have a two episode arc with a single angel, but otherwise we get the entire story of that angel's impact on the characters in one episode. So in that sense, it feels fitting to me that it would take one episode for us to get to see the beginning and the end of that angel's appearance in the world.
Oh, sure. But at the same time, like, Kaoru is very different from every other angel.
He is. But I think that we still get to see the extent of his impact on Shinji just in that little bit that we see him.
The impact he has is not insignificant. I'm not trying to diminish that. But it's like, give me more. Like, that is the real interesting stuff that's going on. I did actually read a small thing, an interview with, I think it was Anna, about Kaoru in particular. And because after Kaoru appeared, he became a character that people like attach to. He's in one episode of this entire series, and like, there is a lot of fan art about Kaoru. Like, a lot of people attached to him.
Well, that's not surprising.
Well, that's the thing, though. To Anno, it was. He's like, I didn't expect that. Like, he didn't expect that Kaoru would have such an impact. And actually, in the remake, the rebuilds, apparently Kaoru has a bigger role there. But even so, like, is he fascinating in a show about relationships? That fascinating relationship you need to dwell more on, but. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, like, my favorite moment, I don't have one really, because it's just, this is just
favorite, quote unquote.
Yeah, favorite, quote unquote. Like, the thing with Asuka in the tub kind of impacted me, like, was a real gut punch. You're or at least I am, kind of built up, like, you know, Asuka's a jerk. Asuka's like annoying as hell. And then, like, the last couple episodes, she's just been utterly broken. And you don't wish that on anyone, and you sympathize with her finally. And like, she didn't deserve what she got, even though I didn't like her that much. It's just, so yeah, we're heading into the last two episodes of Evangelion proper here. What's your, I don't want to say necessarily what you're looking forward to, but like,
yeah, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that maybe because the tone is, well, so there is going to be some more. I remember that the last two episodes are weird.
Yes.
But are they weird the entire time? I mean, don't answer that, but I'm just trying. There has to be something that triggers. I don't know. Maybe it isn't. Now that I think about it, I remember it just being weird from the beginning and like, wait, what's going on? Where, how, what?
Yeah.
So I guess I'm looking forward to that. I am looking forward to something different. Man, I'm not looking forward to more of it. I'm just ready for it to be done, the pain to be over.
Almost there.
But no, I am. I am looking forward to it because it's still good.
Yes.
I'm still glad that I watched this. I'm glad that I had this experience of thinking about it and dwelling on it and piecing it together.
Mm-hmm.
There is a part of me that is looking forward to those next two episodes. But I'm also going to be figuring out, how am I going to cheer myself up afterwards?
Yeah. Again, going into this thing prepared with whatever like YouTube videos you can get, I guess.
YouTube videos, ice cream, chocolate, beer.
Something of some sort of intoxication would be nice, I think. Yeah, yeah. I mean, for my part, like, yeah, I'm looking forward to these last two episodes because they are very different. And yet I don't, that's the thing. I'm the same as you. Is like, I remember them being different, but I don't necessarily remember them in context of everything else. So I'm interested to see that. But I'm also interested because these last two episodes were so different at the time that there was a huge backlash against them.
Mm-hmm. And hence end of Evangelion.
Well, to some degree, yeah. So these are kind of, and again, this is going off memory. I'm not spoiling anything, I don't think. But like, this is more, these next two episodes are kind of character closure. Where like, I don't think, I could be wrong, but I don't think we see anything else in the quote unquote real world for these next two episodes. But we go back to it for end of Evangelion. But I'm really interested to see, this is where Evangelion basically gets to make its statement. Like, this is what this show has been about. And I'm really curious to see if that statement holds with everything that we've been going through so far with this. Like, was End of Evangelion necessary at the end of this? I'm not sure. And that's kind of what I'm eager to find out. So yeah, so that's going to be it for this episode of Evangelion. Next week, we're going to be talking about the last two episodes, as we said, episodes 25 and 26. You can email the podcast at evangeligan@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at evangeligan.
And you should go to evangeligan on Twitter, because there you will find all of our coping mechanisms.
Yeah, we've been...
If you are also watching this show with us and need some help, there's cute puppies and memes. Not as many as we should have shared, but...
Yeah, maybe we'll put more up between now and then. We'll live tweet, like, after we're both done, we just post, like, a cat picture or something.
That sounds good. It's a deal. And so as far as me, you can find me on both Twitter and Instagram at alcowett, A-L-C-A-O-U-E-T-T-E, lots of vowels. And you can also find me online on Facebook, hanging out in the Love Thy Nerd community. Cool. And what about you?
I am at Galenblade on Twitter, G-A-L-E-N-B-L-A-D-E. Thanks to everybody for listening. It's been a weird episode. If you'd like to help us out, you can leave us a review on your podcast service of choice. It really does help other people discover the show. Our next podcast is going to be up September. We made it in September. September 4th.
That's crazy.
Wednesday, September 4th. And we will be dealing with the end. But until then, we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.